A few days ago, I gave a lecture about some points of concern about ISKCON, which was potentially controversial, although no controversy has erupted around it so far. I received a few questions about that, which I'll answer now. How should I advise my disciples on how they should respond to reactions or questions posed to them by disciples of other gurus on the lecture, especially when they live in a multi-guru scenario? Multi-guru means in many temples, or not just temples, but many communities of devotees, there are gurus of different disciples. Whereas in India in particular, and in some other place or some other areas, you find that most of the devotees are disciples of one guru. So with the comment, we should not bring this debate from the boardroom to the grassroots. Do you understand what that means? That there's some matter which should be settled at a higher level, and not just that junior devotees, they argue among themselves. And I agree with that. I mean, as I said when I gave that lecture, I'm not on a campaign. But I feel that it's my duty to inform my disciples or anyone else who wants to hear that there are certain problems which we should be aware of, because after all, this is supposed to be a spiritual science. Srila Prabhupada often spoke about spiritual science. Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana, the science of knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we should understand scientifically, it's not just all sentiment. And according to the science of Krishna consciousness, there are certain signs which we should be able to recognize that something's not right. You want to sit like this? Looks like you're going to jump on top of me. Look like a lion about to pounce. If you want, I mean, you can sit like that if you want, if it's easier to remain awake or whatever. But especially if you're leaning forward like that, it looks like the pose of a lion about to jump on someone. We do tend to be, here's another observation about our society, that we do tend to, despite Srila Prabhupada so much stressing that this is a spiritual science, we do tend to be not very scientific, and we tend to be like a religion. Atheists, they criticize, one of their many criticisms of religion, many of them which are at least somewhat valid, one of the criticisms is that it's a crutch. You've all heard this, it's a psychological crutch. That you're feeling distress in this world, and therefore you just take to religion and you hope that there's something better going on somewhere else, or that you can imagine that there's a God or something like this. But that's one reason why Srila Prabhupada distinguished Krishna consciousness from mundane religion, which it is different. It's supposed to be a spiritual science in which one is one doesn't just take a religion like a sleeping pill, like the class is like a sleeping pill, right? That you just join a religion and you think, well, now I'm saved or whatever, and then you just don't have to don't think about anything. But rather one is supposed to, ideally one is supposed to take to it with his intelligence. Of course, we can't expect everyone to be like that. But Srila Prabhupada, he specifically set up, or one of his specific aims within ISKCON was to train a new class of brahmanas, or thinking people. They have to, a brahmana means not just one who learns, but the best class of brahmana is one who can think philosophically. But we do tend to get many people who join who are just content to join and then have their thinking done for them. This is one of the complaints of the atheists. Of course, they get their thinking done for them by Dawkins and company, but they protest that, you see, you just blindly follow. So that this is widespread in our society, even among people who otherwise might seem to be intelligent, is that we see things which are not according to the spiritual science, and we just go along with it, or we think it, or we, the worst thing is we don't even think about it at all, and we just presume that it must be right. See, I got a lot of trouble some years ago when I gave a lecture saying that, well, we shouldn't think that what someone says is right because he's a guru, but he's a guru because what he says is right, not round the other way. So that wasn't a very popular analysis, but actually it's a fact. So if there are problems, we should see. I mean, it's like you don't have to be an astrologer to say that, or a soothsayer, or a shaman to see that the world's heading for a lot of problems. There's all this talk, 2012. Many people in the world think the world's going to end, or there's going to be cataclysmic changes in 2012. Well, definitely there'll be a lot of problems in 2012, and guess what? There are a lot of problems already in 2011, and there'll be a lot of problems in 2013 also, because the karmic deficit, you could say, they're talking about budget deficits, the karmic deficit is beginning to kick in. We're getting, the human race is getting reactions for its grossly exploitive and sinful activities. I mean, reactions are always there, but they're becoming more pronounced now. So similarly, you don't have to be an astrologer to see that if someone, even if they're renowned to be a very advanced devotee or very pure or very charismatic and very successful in preaching, but if they, whatever, however much they may be presumed to be on an advanced level, which they then if they start to do things which are not Krishna conscious, then they're not going to remain in Krishna consciousness very long. They're already not properly situated. So you don't have to be an astrologer to see that. Within our society generally, you may say, well, yeah, leave it. This should be dealt with at the boardroom level. But generally, it's not dealt with because for some reason or other, when leading devotees start to, if leading devotees start to deviate, then it's usually left until there's some really gross manifestation before, like at the last minute, before anything is said from the top level. Or it may be that behind the scenes they're trying to do something. But usually what happens when someone's a big shot in the movement, then they won't listen to anyone, and they're convinced that what they're doing is right, and all their followers are adulating them, and they're able to somehow or other justify what they're doing by some perversion of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And it may look that what they're doing is right, because it seems to be that they're getting very good results. But anyway, we've seen it many times. I mean, we should know by now. We've seen it so many times. So, therefore, I feel it's my duty at least to say something about this. How do you react with this, about this, if you're asked by disciples of other gurus? Well, if you want to take the time and the trouble and have the patience to do so, you could explain to them in the way that I just explained. Say that, you know, Krishna consciousness, you have to take some time and be somewhat expert. Otherwise, you can brush it off or whatever. You may say, well, one thing is, it's very unlikely that they're going to listen to you anyway, because if they haven't been trained in the spiritual science from the beginning, then to suddenly try to educate them, and it might be quite difficult. It's not impossible. If they've read Prabhupada's books, they should have some idea about that. But yeah, like I say, I'm not on a campaign. Maybe I should be, but it doesn't seem to work. It's just like, you know, you have to let fate take its course. And you never know. Things might get better or whatever. It may not come to, matters may not come to the, to a horrible conclusion. But maintaining unity within our society is also important. It's not easy, especially in Kali Yuga, in the age of quarrel, to maintain unity. Srila Prabhupada famously wrote about maintaining unity in diversity, that people have different outlooks and approaches. This is much quoted. Of course, Srila Prabhupada explained that in another letter when he said that there may be different devotees working in different ways, but they should all unite following the instructions of the spiritual master. That's the point. It's unity in diversity, not unity in perversity. Which means that you just do whatever you like and say Jai Prabhupada now and then, and then you're a as long as you remain a bona fide member of ISKCON, you can do and say any damn thing you like. But first it should be ascertained what are the orders and desires of Srila Prabhupada. Generally we see that people just start some program and without even consulting with others, just like I was talking about the midday meals. Did anyone get any GBC permission to do that? They just started doing that. That's just one of many examples. Atma yoga, all this kind of thing. And without first consulting with the GBC, you just start some program, and then it just comes to be accepted as part of the Krishna conscious movement. Whether it's actually fulfilling Srila Prabhupada's desire, that should be first discussed with others. But so, what should you do? How should they respond to reactions or questions? Keeping the peace, what can I say? It's living a lie, you could say, to some extent. But, what can you do? I mean, if I can't do anything, then what can you do? So, we just have to wait for time to take its course. That's all. Time is also a representation of Krishna. So sometimes time seems to work against Krishna consciousness. I mean, there was a time when, it's happened several times in the history of the universe, that the brahmanas have been killed or persecuted or not allowed to perform sacrifices. And you may say, well, why does Krishna allow that? People want to do yajnas to worship Vishnu. Why does Krishna allow them to be persecuted by demons? Just Krishna waits for the demons' offenses to become pukka, you could say, or just like a boil to become ripe so it's ready to pop. And then he comes as Nrsimhadev, as Krishna himself. So, we may say, why is the Krishna conscious movement going through all these kind of things? Well, it may be for some time, and then we can pray that at some point in time we'll just come to the point of remembering the very simple thing which Srila Prabhupada always taught us, which is that we just have to follow him. That's all. We don't have to invent anything new. Just follow him with firm faith that he is the empowered representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We don't have to add anything or subtract anything. Just follow. That's all. And you know, when different people have done their different circus acts of, you know, someone's a rock star and someone's a welfare worker, you know, the ISKCON's answers to Saint, what's her name, Mother Teresa, and, you know, someone's the sun king, the, you know, we've had so many different clown acts, and eventually we might just understand that being a guru in ISKCON means simply to follow Srila Prabhupada, that's all, and just do, follow what he told us to do and instruct others to do that also. So, it's difficult to understand all of this, but we shouldn't be discouraged, whatever anyone else may do. We can follow Srila Prabhupada's simple instructions. They're not difficult to follow. We should think that, or understand that it should be expected that Maya will attack ISKCON. Because ISKCON is the movement that is meant for defeating Maya and establishing Krishna consciousness in the world. There was one play by one Girish Ghosh, which Prabhupada had translated into English from Bengali. And the devotees used to perform that. Still in Mayapur, the Bengali devotees, they sometimes perform that. And it shows Kali, the personality of Kali, how he received, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, and how the personality of Kali was so much disturbed It's a good play. We should get that in Hindi and other languages also. Prabhupada approved it. Even some one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada that, well, how can we perform this play? It's just written by some Girish Ghosh. Who's that? He's not a pure devotee. And Prabhupada said, well, it's a good play. Why not? So it was very effective, and they used to perform that in New York, and people would come and pay to see it, and they appreciate it very much. So, yeah, we can expect that Maya and her agents, such as the personality of Kali, will attack this movement. And especially, we can expect she'll attack the leaders, because if you get one leader, then you get so many followers all at once. But anyway, anyone who's come to a position of leadership in Krishna consciousness, we can understand that they're a great personality. We shouldn't think badly of them, but at the same time, we should understand if they're doing something which is not in the line of Krishna consciousness, then something's wrong. Something seriously wrong. So we could attempt to explain this to others, or otherwise we could just pacify them and say that, well, something, you know, like this. Well, there is an issue, yeah, but let's see what happens. You could see like something like that. Rather. But it seems that no one wants to make it an issue. They'd rather not discuss all these things. So, all right, let it remain like that. And like I say, I've done my duty. Someone I know sent me an email in which so-and-so Swami is playing a blues composition with a Western band. I find this depressing and discouraging for those who want to follow Prabhupada and our acharyas. Yeah, naturally it can be discouraging if you look up to people and then they do things that disappoint, just like, you know, children like to look up to their parents, but then if they see their parents acting in a bad way, they become disappointed. How can this be accepted? Well, you don't have to accept it. And how do those who want to please Prabhupada and his sincere followers take this? Well, just understand according to this what I'm telling you. Another question about this. I come across new devotees who are more attracted to reading such and such a book, autobiography, instead of Prabhupada's books. This happened to me and I ended up discrediting that book and telling the devotee to avoid such books and instead read Prabhupada's books first. I have not read it, nor do I intend to, nor do I have the time, but I've seen some excerpts in which so-and-so Swami claims to have received the Hare Krishna mantra from the river Ganges before he met Srila Prabhupada. This looks very strange and sounds like self-aggrandizement. Do you think it is wrong to openly discredit such a work to new devotees? Actually, it's not. We should, but what happens is people come newly and they get given this book, which I see it as an act of violence to give people this book. They should give people Prabhupada's book. So they get this book first, they're going to be, and it's going to be very, very difficult for them to have a proper understanding of Krishna consciousness, ever. If you get started in the wrong way. But on the other hand, what can we do? I would take it up with the with the local ISKCON authorities and tell them that, look, we should promote Prabhupada's books. Or if they, or you could tell me if you like to read biographies, read Prabhupada's biography. It's a lot more Krishna conscious. But, you know, what happens, people come new and then there's this whole hype going on and they get carried away. And new people, how much can they understand philosophically? You can tell them that, you could maybe tell them, okay, that's very good, but if you actually want to understand what is Krishna conscious and get instruction in it, then read Prabhupada's books. And you could maybe, you know, read a little bit with them and just show them what is the difference in quality. I mean, I remember when I first started reading Prabhupada's books, and then and now also, even after so many years, I was just astounded by the quality of Prabhupada's books. That this is something, I'd read so many books by so many intelligent people with so many insights, and religious books and scriptures, translations of scriptures, but reading Prabhupada's books was just really a revelation. That it's very clear that Srila Prabhupada is a person in touch with reality. Actually, he's not speaking from this plane at all. It's completely different from anything else. Every word is just full of spiritual meaning. It doesn't appeal to the mind, the senses, the ego, or even the mundane intelligence. Completely from the spiritual platform. So you could just sit down and read. Especially, I often mention that the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, that just that one verse, of course it's a long verse, but there's so much in there. It's that one verse of Srimad Bhagavatam has got more actual spiritual substance than all the Bible, Quran, and Buddhist books, and even all the Upanishads and all everything put together. And then you read verse 2, and the first three verses of the Bhagavatam are just, actually the first two especially, the third verse can be especially appreciated by very advanced devotees. But the first two verses, they're just revelatory. So you could try doing that. But don't expect to have too much luck. You could say to the local ISKCON authorities that you could appraise them of your concerns about this, and then some policy could be made that we distribute Prabhupada's books. Actually, as I said before, Prabhupada himself didn't say that we should only distribute his books, but some temples like to do that because it makes it easy, because then you don't have to sort out all the good books from the not so good books written by others apart from Prabhupada. The problem with that is that some of them are very good and should be distributed, when some of them are not at all good and shouldn't be distributed. But if you make such a distinction, then out of sentiment, some people get upset. And then you get some temples where you can't even find Prabhupada's books for sale. There's all kinds of other books for sale, even books by non-devotees. The Kami translations of Shastra. All kinds of strange books. Yeah, it's time to... maybe it's not time. Maybe you have to wait for the time to offer ISKCON back to Prabhupada. Just to finish this, I've heard that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote an autobiography of his early years. I've read it online. Well, that was never meant for mass distribution. He himself wrote that it's just meant. It's like the Vedas, they were never meant for writing down and being printed. Shruti, the original Veda, is only meant for oral transmission. So some things are not, they're not meant for wide distribution. So that autobiography of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was specifically meant for his one son who requested it, Lalita Prasad. So about autobiographies and biographies of devotees, should they be or should they not be? They may be if it serves the cause of Krishna consciousness. That's all. If people are benefited by that. The particular one under discussion, I don't think people are at all benefited by it. But they might be carried away on the waves of mundane sentiment, but as far as Krishna consciousness is concerned, which begins with distinguishing spirit from matter, there's nothing in there whatsoever to help. So a related question, can an acharya fall down? Well, one point to understand, and this is not, I'm not just trying to fudge the issue here, this is not equivocating, is that the term acharya is used in different ways. In the, very near the beginning of his commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada refers to an acharya in the true sense of the term. So acharya can mean on the level of Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Ramanuja Acharya, can also mean someone who has two or three students who he teaches. It can mean he's teaching them dancing or something which is not directly Krishna conscious. So obviously devotees on the level of Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, they don't fall down. We do have quote in Mahabharata, quoted in Srila Prabhupada's books, the verse Guru api avaliptasya kaya kaya majanataha utpanna pratipannasya paritiago vidhiyate. That even if one is a guru, the most respectable position, but if he's not properly situated, he's hopelessly addicted to sense gratification, he was properly situated but now isn't properly situated, doesn't know how to instruct properly, he should be fully given up. Now this was spoken by Bhishma to Parashuram, his guru. When Parashuram said, hey, you can't fight with me, and Bhishma said, damn it, I'm going to fight with you. So you may say, well, Parashuram, he was the he wasn't the spiritual guru, he taught the science of weapons. But that same verse is quoted by Jiva Goswami in his Sandarbhas in relation to spiritual guru. And Prabhupada quotes it in that context also. So, yes, it is possible. But then again, we should see Shastra. That's, what is that? Navai jano jatu katantana vrijam makunda sevanya vadanga sanskritam upagohanam puna. No, I forgot the rest of the verse. Narad says to Vyasa that a devotee doesn't fall down, he doesn't become like a karmi. Even if he falls, he's still a devotee. So, and Srila Prabhupada said that One can act as an acharya by following the instructions of the previous acharyas. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself said, Jari deko tare koha Krishna upadesh, amaragya guru hoyataro udesh. Who did he say this to? He'd say this, whoever you meet, instruct them in the science of Krishna, and this will become a guru and deliver the land. He said this to whoever he met. So he just meet people, infuse them with Krishna consciousness, and go on and tell them, now you'll be a guru, on my order. And Prabhupada often quoted this. So, they may not be fully qualified or trained, but there's such a need for gurus or people to instruct in the science of Krishna that even someone who's not qualified to the level of a Mahabhagavat, he may instruct others by following the instructions of the Mahabhagavat. So, it's a fight. In the fight, some people will be killed. Prabhupada gave that example actually from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So some people will be killed, but still the fight has to go on. Even some of the leaders of the troops, but still the fight has to go on. So, we should all understand that just like, you know, you might be fighting and the leader of your platoon, he gets killed, but still, you know, there's the general, you have to follow him. So the leader of the platoon, he has to take orders from the general. So like that, the gurus in ISKCON should be understood that they are followers of Prabhupada, and as much as they follow the Prabhupada, they're qualified to be a guru. If you don't follow Prabhupada, then you're qualified to be a guru. That's all. So they may, if they fall away, it's because Krishna didn't think they're fit to represent Prabhupada anymore. So if we think that we're independently powerful, then that's my Prabhupada himself said, I'm just doing what my guru told me, that's all. It's a simple matter. You just have to follow. So don't be discouraged. You can go on. Others may fall away, but you can go on. Others will fall away. You can expect that. Now, just one other point. The one who asked this question said that he got a mail from Tim Lee. Tim Lee, that's his name. He was initiated by Prabhupada as Puranjandas. So he's very dedicated promoter of the Ritvikvad, which is the idea that only Prabhupada can initiate. Prabhupada could never have meant that anyone else should initiate after him, because how could anyone fall down? That's his idea. So now we may think that, well, you know, let me try and work everything out here, what's going on. But again, there's a spiritual science. It's not just by one's intelligence one can understand Krishna. One of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's most important instructions is asat sanga tyag, a Vaishnavacha, to give up bad association. So, Tim Lee, no doubt, is, from his own perspective, very sincere about what he's doing. He's very dedicated to what he's doing. No doubt. Sincere, it's like, you know, sincere thief, Prabhupada. A sincere atheist, honest thief. So, he can't see any good in anything in ISKCON. He thinks, from his perspective, everything in ISKCON is bad, and his duty is to warn everyone that ISKCON is a dangerous cult which promotes pedophilia and black marketeering and so many other things. It's a sex cult, according to him. which is not true. He's fanatical. So, my advice, if you want to take it, is don't associate with him. Don't read his stuff. You can't get Krishna consciousness by floating around on the internet and just looking up everything that's there. Find saintly association. It is available in ISKCON. And stick with that. And don't try to understand everything by your own mind also. Intelligence has to be exercised. But one of the means to exercise the intelligence is to know that we can't understand everything with our intelligence. We can't examine everything in the world and then come to a conclusion. It's not possible, because even if you examine everything in the world, by the time you finish doing that, there'll be some other things. So it'll never come to an end. At some point, one has to make a leap of faith. And if one is sincere, Krishna will help us. Okay, that's all I want to say now, unless any of you have any questions about this. Could you speak a little louder, because these guys have a good... They should become preachers, right? These guys who go around... What's he selling? Collecting papers. Old bottles. Yeah, like that.
If any person come and say this is also in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, even common people may say that's true. When you're distributing books, some people may say, "Well, this is going on in ISKCON, that's going on in ISKCON," and you can say, "Yeah." You can tell them, "Yeah, there are some bad things." It's in a big organization. You can expect that there'll be some bad things. Not everyone who joins will be completely sincere. But that doesn't mean that the whole organization is bad. It's just like, there's... Someone from India may go to America and commit a crime. So... Would you judge from that everyone in India is a criminal? Or every Indian who goes to America is a criminal? Is that a reasonable conclusion to draw? You have to see the overall activities. Yeah, there is a lot of what there should not be within ISKCON, but that doesn't mean that the whole purpose of the organization is wrong. The whole society is corrupted. Actually, in some ways, I would say that a high level of corruption has entered our movement. This is the kind of thing that Tim Lee and company like to quote out of context. But more at the philosophical level than the there is also at the behavioral level. But again, you can't say it's all bad. A lot of people are chanting Hare Krishna. A lot of Rathiyatra is going on. A lot of Prabhupada's books are being distributed. These are all good things. You can see here, just in going around with me the last few days, and we're going around Gujarat, right, different places, and so many people are taking up Krishna consciousness in a good spirit, feeling spiritual and enlivenment by doing that. We can't say that's all false. We're not cheating them. We're not traveling around place to place to cheat people. We're only speaking the message of Bhagavad Gita as given to us by Prabhupada, right? We're distributing Prabhupada's books, right? Giving them prasadam. These are not bad things, right? At least you can judge for yourself what you are part of. This little group here in a small town in Gujarat, it's all selflessly for the sake of serving Prabhupada and Krishna, is it not? You're getting training in spiritual practices, spiritual philosophy, according to guru, sadhu, and shastra. So you can tell people, yeah, you can say, yeah, there are some bad things. But that's not the whole purpose of the movement, or that everyone in it is bad. Sometimes they talk about, you know, big leaders, they're just exploiting you and living a comfortable life. Well, you can tell them that you know a big leader, and I'm not taking your money on, and I'm not living a, well, I guess it's comfortable compared to the people living in the Chopopati just over there. So, slightly comfortable, you could say, but certainly not luxurious living. So, at least one day, of course, they're all working hard. I don't see any of the leaders in ISKCON simply exploiting people. I don't see that at all. They're all working hard to spread Krishna consciousness. And if they are corrupt, then Krishna will look after them. Maya will look after them. But I see all the leaders, they're working hard. Look at Jayapataka Maharaj. For years people were telling him, you've got to rest more, you've got to sleep more. He wouldn't, and eventually he got this severe stroke, and he's paralyzed, and still he's going on traveling all over the world and preaching. I mean, what for? I mean, anyone would say that, all right, now if he retires, it's all right, let him just sit. But he won't. He's addicted to preaching. So, I don't see that's, you know, how can you blame? Just to see all bad, that is not a beneficial attitude. It doesn't help anyone. That's why Tim Lee and the Ritvik Vadis and company, what they say, it's not all untrue. It may be exaggerated, but it's not all untrue. But is it? It may not help us to hear it from persons who, by associating with them, I don't see anyone ever benefited from associating with them. Maybe they're trying to save people from associating with people like me, the terrible gurus of our movement. But anyway, you have to choose. Yeah.
Do you think it is a better idea if this particular leader in question and yourself and some senior sannyasis sit together and come?
Why don't we all sit down together and work it all out? That's, well, there was an article in Bhakti Godhead many years ago by Druta Karma Prabhu. This must have been during the 1980s. During the 1980s, pretty much everyone in the Western world was sure that it's just a matter of time before the NATO powers. You know what NATO is? It means America, Britain, France, the Western powers. They go to war with the Soviet bloc, specifically the USSR. There's going to be a big nuclear war and there'll be mass destruction. Some of our devotees in England, they were running a successful business selling, making nuclear shelters and all this. Even one of our gurus, who's no longer with us, spent lots of money making nuclear shelters with canned food and all. Pretty much everyone was sure. And there was some people were saying that, no, I don't, they'd go and see some people, you can buy these things to help you survive after the nuclear blast, and they say, forget it, when the bomb drops, I just want to be right underneath it. And there were films made, I saw both. One was made in America, it was called The Day After. All our devotees saw it. I went to see it, and it's Prabhupada saw it, actually, before I took sannyas. It's called The Day After, and it showed like what would happen with the nuclear bombs dropping, what would it would be like afterward. And then in Britain they made one also, because they thought the day after was too optimistic. And they showed more like what it would really be like, and it would be really miserable. Anyway, I'm getting on a digression here. Just goes to show that what you think will not happen. I was just reading one of the earliest Back to Godheads. It was 1967 or 1968, and in the editorial it was talking about, now in the modern age we have news from all over the world, and that's going to force people to be honest. And he was convinced that the world is going to change, because everyone, the news, you can't hide and people can't be corrupt. But what happened was that certain people controlled, they took over the control of all the news channels and everything, so the news became just another means of propaganda. So it's interesting that people, you know, they think this is going to happen, but it doesn't happen like what they think. So that's why. It's better to limit our speculations about the future to saying that, yes, definitely, birth, death, old age and disease is going to be there. Anyway, coming back to the point. Dhrutakama wrote an article for Back to Godhead saying that, you know, why don't Ronnie and Leonid, that means Ronald Reagan, the President of America, and Leonid Brezhnev, the head of the Communist Party in Russia, why don't they just get together and sit down and talk together and sort everything out, and everything will be okay? That did happen, actually, after Brezhnev, and then there came Chernenko and Andropov, and then there came the famous... What's that guy with the black dot on his head? Oh, come on, his famous name. They had the one who cut up the USSR. Come on, you must know. The famous leader of the USSR who chopped it all up into pieces. Anyway, somehow or other, I forgot his name. I remembered all the less significant ones. Russian guy. They gave him a Nobel Prize. Nobel Prize is also just a bunch of propaganda. So, anyway, they did get together, and then Reagan famously called the USSR the evil empire. And then, anyway, the USSR all broke up. So anyway, Dhrutakama, he gave the conclusion that, well, it's not so easy that you can just talk it out, because there are deeper forces at work, and they're not just political forces. There's the force of time, there's the force of karma. The big leaders, they think they're in control, but they're not in control. We're all controlled. There are bigger forces than ourselves. So why don't we all get together and sort it out? Well, like I said, that you know, often when someone becomes a big leader, they can't hear anyone what they have to say. They're convinced that what they're doing is right. And I also mentioned in my previous lecture about this that I tried speaking. Maybe I'm not the most diplomatic person. I tried speaking to a previous leader about some of his strange things. But it didn't change his mind at all, and though he agreed under pressure to do certain things to rectify the situation, he didn't. And then he left this world. So... why don't we get together? Yeah, it would be good. Let's see if something can be done. But it's I'm in touch with one GBCA member about this, who says he's going to, at least he's thinking about doing something. So, or they're considering what to do. So. Let's see if anything happens. It's very difficult to deal with all these things, because people, you know, they have their own power base and this and that. So it should be the easy solution, but is not so easy. Just like, you see, I don't get involved in all these email discussions about different issues. Just like, you know, Basu Ghosh, he gets into these email discussions and he quotes Prabhupada, you know, word by, you know, line by line. And, you know, and he says, you know, on different issues, and says, so, how can you go against this? And, but people do. They come up with their own reasoning. Well, if Prabhupada was here now, he would have done this, he would have done that, this, that, the other. And, you know, quote some obscure shastra which no one ever heard of, or no acharya in recent times has ever implemented. So, what can you do? So you go on distributing Prabhupada's books and read Prabhupada's books and preach that, and people will be benefited.
Why some disciples of any acharya, they go along, means follow acharya,
why do they follow their acharya? Well, that's what you're supposed to do.
No, I mean, why some they follow this, some they get sidetracked.
Why do they get sidetracked? Well, it's, you know, ask them. Why? Why? Why is anyone in Maya? It's not that just by walking in the door of ISKCON that you become free from Maya. It's not that by taking sannyas you become free from Maya. It's not that by taking up the role of a guru one becomes free from Maya. Maya never sleeps. She's always active. She's very powerful. One Srila Prabhupada said that his disciples, they're not afraid enough of Maya. We always have this tendency to think that we're more advanced than we are. I can preach to young girls, there's no problem. That was the end of his brahmachari life. That was the end of his sannyas. I can associate with Mayavadis, I'm purifying them. Well, let's see. Then you become a Mayavadi. If you associate with Mayavadis, talk like a Mayavadi, dress like a Mayavadi, then what are you? A bird that swims in the water, quack, quack, makes a sound like that, walks on land in a wobbling kind of manner, has webbed feet, what do you call it? It's a duck, right? So if someone associates with Mayavadis, talks like a Mayavadi, doesn't dress like a Vaishnavi, look like a Mayavadi, then what do you call them? Hare Krishna. Okay, go out. Distributing books means fighting with Mayavad. There's so many quotes from Prabhupada saying he wants to defeat Mayavad. I'm going to post one right now. Every day I post a quote from Prabhupada. So one of the many quotes from Prabhupada. Don't make any compromise with Mayavad. Prabhupada said Mayavad is worse than atheism. It's covered atheism. Worse than Buddhism. In Buddhism, they deny any spiritual reality. But in Mayavad, Pachandam Bodham Uchyate, it's covered Buddhism. They say they're spiritual, but it has what they call spiritual has no name, form, qualities, pastimes, abode, associates. So it's worse. Bodha chaotic. What is that? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says Bodha chaotic. Veda shray nastik yavad. Vedna mania bodh hoita nastik. Vedashrit, what is that? Bodhaita nastik. Vedashrit, nastikyavad, bodha chaotic. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said the Buddhists are called nastics or atheists because they don't accept the Vedas. But the Mayavadis, they're worse than the Buddhists because they theoretically accept the Vedas, but they preach the same thing. So they're worse.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.